Blog Talk Radio.
Yes?
Continue our wonderful, wonderful book study of Gary Zukav's book, Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Authentic Power. Wow. Good morning, Dr. Reggie.
Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And I also want to say good morning to Gloria Wells, our other co-host who's moderating the chat room this morning. And wow, I hope you guys had a great weekend. The weather was fabulous. I think we had a thunderstorm. Was it Friday or Saturday? We had heavy rain. I think it was Friday that we had the beautiful rain. It kind of cooled it down a little bit, but it was absolutely beautiful this weekend. And kids go back to school today. Yay! They're going to be awesome this year. They're going to just, oh my goodness, I am sending blessings to all of them that they reap the rewards of great education, that the teachers are enthusiastic and able to communicate effectively with them, that they're well-disciplined and just loving their life and enjoying the process of learning. Thank you. Father God, Father, Mother God, thank you. So, anyway, Dr. Reggie, do you want to do our opening prayer?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Father, for this beautiful day, a brand new day starting the week. We thank you for all your blessings, visible and yet to be manifested. We thank you for partnerships that are always growing, and we're always learning from each other, no matter what the relationship is. We're learning from that relationship and that person, and they are learning from us. Let us always be the positive in putting the greatest input in the relationship to show and demonstrate your power and your love and your majestic energy in us and through us. We are walking, talking miracles. Let it be so, and so it is.
And so it is. And this morning, we're moving into Chapter 12 of Super Rich of Spiritual Partnerships, and it's entitled Equality. And I thought this was an interesting title, and I've heard Gary Zukav talk about equality in a video that that I saw on YouTube with Oprah Winfrey, and he says that spiritual partners are equals. There's no superiority or no inferiority. That because on the soul level, we are equals. So let's see how he has developed that thesis that on a soul level we're equals. He's given the example of a scale. He says, my father owned a jewelry store in a small town in Kansas, and somewhere in his career he acquired an antique diamond scale, and my mother kept it on a shelf of our family room bookcase. I had hardly noticed it until after he passed on, and when I did, I was impressed by its quality and elegance. The scale itself was enclosed in a handmade glass and mahogany case. The front panel slid up to allow access to the elegant instrument. Its simplicity and beauty made it a work of art for me. Two brass trays, each suspended from an arm, poised on a brass column with a fulcrum at the top, and they balanced one another perfectly. A long needle-thin pointer attached to the beam from which the trays hung. It descended straight down the full length of the column to the base, where vertical markings on a small brass plate showed its slightest deviation from center. Below the enclosure was a miniature wooden drawer made with the same care, and the drawer contained a small block of wood with small holes of different sizes that were drilled into it. In each hole, there was a miniature metal weight molded into the perfect form of a tiny cylinder with a pharmacy-style knob at the top, and it fit perfectly. A delicate pair of tweezers lay beside the block and were used to place a diamond onto one of the trays and weights onto the other, one at a time, until the needle again pointed directly downward to center. If too many weights were added to bring the trays into balance again, or too few, the discrepancy was immediately evident. When both trays were empty, they were level with one another. When a diamond was placed on one tray and its precise weight was placed on the other, they became level again. Only then, at the point of perfect balance, did the long needle point vertically and precisely downward. When either tray was above or below the other, the imbalance was obvious. Perhaps a digital scale could weigh the diamond more precisely, but it would require calibration to ensure accuracy. My father's scale does not have this problem because the trays are in perfect balance, full or empty, or they are not. If they are, the balance is evident. If they are not, so is the imbalance. So equality is like that. It either exists or it doesn't exist. In order to see if you feel equal with another person, picture yourself on one tray of an imaginary diamond scale that is large enough to hold people. And then picture another person on the other tray. If the trays are level, you are equal. If they are not, then you are unequal. Your weight and the weight of the other person do not affect the positions on the trays as they would on a real scale. For example, you may discover that when you put a child on the other tray, your tray surprisingly goes up as though the child weighs more than you, or that when you put someone who is heavier than you on the other tray, your tray goes down as though you weigh more. That is because when you feel superior, your tray is always higher than the other tray. In other words, you're looking down on that person. And when you feel inferior, your tray is always lower because you look up to that person. So here's an example. People who feel superior to their children or to children in general always find that their tray is higher when a child is placed on the other tray. These people feel more worthy, more important, and valuable than the child, even if they feel that they love the child. But people who feel superior in general, or feel entitled. Live on a tray that is always higher, regardless of who is on the other tray. On the other hand, people who feel inferior, in other words, they need to please, they find themselves on the lower tray no matter who is on the other tray, even an abusive partner or an insensitive employer. They look up to everyone. Isn't that interesting? So the slightest experience of superiority or inferiority upsets the balance. The one tray sinks below or rises above the other. And the scale always shows your balance. It always shows equality or your imbalance, which is inequality. So it is your personal scale. It does not show you the experiences of others. They have their own scales. What they see on their scales is for them. But what you see on your scale, that's for you. So I often discover that my scale is out of balance, no matter how shocked I am at each discovery. The more I explore the frightened parts of my personality, the more I see how superior some of them feel toward women, people who are older, people who are younger, and people who believe, speak, or appear differently than I do. Some of the frightened parts of my personality feel that they have no equal in creation, and extraordinarily arrogant, which equals it means frightened, and an accurate perception, but not to them. It is a jolt to me to find that they are prejudiced in ways that I abhor, but they exist. And until I became aware of them, I could not challenge them, and they determined my actions. So this morning, what I'm asking you to do is to quickly scan your personality to see if there are any frightened parts there. As we move through this chapter, Gary Zukav is really telling us something that we've studied before in all of our other book studies. As a matter of fact, the first time I think it really jumped out so clearly for me is when we went through The Way of the Wizard. And that first lesson was, get rid of the judgments and the labels. And I'm reading this to you, can't you see that that's what Gary Zukav is saying? Get rid of the judgments and the labels. And here's what the connection that I like that he's making that helps us delve even more into cleaning up our stuff. He identifies those judgments as our frightened parts of our personality. Can you see now how what's going on within you, you project onto others? I'm sure if you, you know, have a judgment regarding someone, that they, in their mind, are not in agreement with whatever it is that you believe about them. They're somewhere else totally in their consciousness. But that judgment has been based upon your fear. As you become aware of the different parts of your personality, you may discover that your scale is out of balance as frequently as I discovered mine to be, but perhaps in different ways. For example, you may discover a frightened part of your personality that also feels it has no equal in creation, but in the opposite way, it feels inferior to all creation. I have times when I just never felt that I was good enough, I'll be honest. I didn't think I was smart enough. I didn't think I was pretty enough. I mean, everything was wrong with me. I was too fat, too skinny. At one time I was too skinny. Now I'm too fat. Life sure has a way of playing jokes on you, doesn't it? I wasn't disciplined enough. I tore myself apart. Inferiority and superiority are experiences of frightened parts of your personality. Some situations activate frightened parts of your personality that feel inferior, and others stimulate frightened parts of your personality that feel superior. For example, when you put someone on a pedestal, in other words, you idolize that person, you feel inferior to that person. But when that person fails to meet your expectations, and this always happens, she falls off that pedestal and you feel superior to her. So the idol and pedestal are your creations. When you see your idol as a person like you, one illusion disappears and another illusion replaces it. On the other hand, if you discover that someone you did not consider important, for example, a homeless person, can be very helpful to you, he is actually an eccentric billionaire, the reverse happens. The illusion that you are superior, because he does not warrant your attention, is replaced by the illusion that you are inferior, because your attention is drawn to him magnetically. I'm going to open the lines now for some discussion here, for us to talk about this a little bit. If you've had experiences where you're awakening to the frightened parts of your personality, if you have comments or questions, go ahead and press 1 on your telephone keypad. I just think it's so important that we share. I don't want to be the only one giving you guys all my dirt. I need your help. So let me know what your thoughts are, and in particular how you're responding to this book. If it's opening up new levels of awareness of your personality, press 1 on your telephone keypad. I cannot get in the chat room this morning, Gloria, just in case there's something going on there, so you may have to call me if there's a question coming in. I don't know. The past few days, I have not been able to get into the chat room. Okay, so Gary goes on to talk about he's given an example. He says, I was wearing work clothes while working with a contractor who was helping Linda and me improve our beautiful new home. When a subcontractor walked up and abruptly interrupted me to speak with the contractor. And when the contractor introduced me as, quote, the property owner, his behavior suddenly and dramatically changed. He turned his full attention toward me. Oh, he smiled charmingly and he extended his hand. Disregard turned into deference. One frightened part of his personality replaced another when he discovered that I was the potential employer instead of a laborer. He did not think in terms of frightened parts of the personality, but frightened parts of his personality shaped his perception and behavior first one way and then another. You know, Dr. Renji says he never meets strangers, only friends he's never met before. And I've often heard him say that all he sees in each person he meets is God. So he's meeting each person regarding their station in life on equal ground. We are all creation of God. Now let's listen to what Gary says. He says, sometimes when I meet someone who has something I want or I think can help me get what I want, I find myself engaging that person more than others, being more friendly, more available, and more interested in him or her. The tray I am on goes down, and the tray that person is on goes up. Isn't that he's being honest? Look at the difference. Dr. Reggie says, all I see is God. It doesn't matter what their station. And if any of you have been around him, you will know that he has a loving personality, and he treats everyone the same. We used to live in Hollywood, and there were a lot of homeless people in Hollywood. Dr. Reggie knew every last one of them. They will walk up to him, talk to him, and just the way he will talk to you or the way he talks to me, he would talk to those homeless people. I have frightened parts of my personality. But I grew to recognize these people and to love them. And it's not easy, you know, especially when you have some of them walking up and down the street with tutus on. And it's amazing what you see in Hollywood. But they're all creations of God. I admire Gary for being honest and saying and sharing this with you. He says, I feel inferior and I look up to him. The opposite also happens. So we have sometimes I meet someone I think I cannot help in any way, and I find myself less interested in that person and less available and more distant. Because the tray I am on goes up and the tray that person is on goes down. And I look down on him or her. I feel superior. In the first case, I usually see things about the person that I admire. And I judge her. Listen, look at the word he uses here. I judge her positively. And in the second case, I often see things about that person that I do not like or approve, and I judge her negatively. But in both cases, I fail to see him or her as a soul. Dr. Reggie says, everyone I meet, I see God. Equally in meaning what Gary Zukav is saying. I should see their soul. Not the labels I put on them. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Cynthia and Dr. Reggie. It's Karen. How are you this morning?
You're wonderful. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm calling just to make a. I just wanted to make a comment.
Good.
About the book. Mr. Zukav, I can appreciate, but I feel like I have so much work to do because I maybe should have had this book at 2 years old. Because it's like, oh, my goodness, I got to go back to that because of this, you know. It's a lot of work with this book. I mean, if you're doing a, you know, self-analysis.
Yes, yes.
It's a lot of work. I'm like, okay, well, where am I you know, where do I begin with this? Because he may, just because I'm hearing like a cultural, you know, there's some cultural stuff that's different, you know, if he's a white male.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I feel like he's doing, and I had mentioned this before, that he's doing some sort of, you know, cleansing or catharticism, because a lot of stuff that he, you know that is part of his framework really isn't an issue for me personally as I'm reading along.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I mean, I'm able to extract, you know, the meaning in what he's saying, but it's so much work. You know, it's like, okay, now and I know, you know, I understand about the judging and the labels. And the judging, at least for me personally, and the labels are not, they aren't really that significant, but probably because of the way I was reared. So I got to go all the way back to, you know, when I think before I started to, you know, develop this framework. And so it's a little bit exhausting because he's got a lot of information in there. But I think it's, go ahead.
I agree with you. There's a lot of information, but you probably hit passages that ring a bell inside of you.
Uh-huh.
And here's where I think being a multisensory being plays such a significant role. When that bell rings, when you get that little tinge in your stomach,
yes,
that your body is going to signal to you where you need to pay what you need to pay attention to, and that's where you begin your journey.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So you're trying to say, oh, I got to fix all of me, and your soul is saying, okay, oh, I see you're becoming slightly aware of that. Oh, that's coming into remembrance. Oh, okay, I can relate to this. Then that's where your focus should go.
Mm-hmm.
And you just need to trust that part of you. See, this is the other part that's overwhelmed is like the mind, and that's the ego. And, of course, the ego is going to try to tell you, girl, you don't want to fix this. I'm in control here. So, no, this is too big of a project for you. You can't do it. It's too much
work. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, it's like, it doesn't discourage me. It's just like, wow. it's definitely a lot of work. And in many ways, maybe, you know, it's not really even an issue. That's what I'm finding. You know, it's not an issue. It's just I'm just trying to I'm hoping that, you know, the awareness is there. And so with the awareness, if I'm doing that, you know,
mm-hmm.
then I can, you know, be attentive to it. But it's like, you know, with the labeling and the judging, that's never been an issue for me personally, you know. So what am I doing with that, you know? And I feel like with him, it's a cleansing. It's like he's got this cleansing going on, and I guess I'm feeling that I should have some cleansing going on, you know. I should be right along there with him.
Maybe not in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have no judgments or no labels that you've placed on anyone or anything, then I take my hat off to you. I really do. But yeah, he has issues with women. He's being honest there.
Right. Yes. Uh-huh.
You know. But if you really look at what he's saying generically, you know, have there been moments where you felt inferior?
You mean to someone else or about something? I don't know if I use that word inferior, but you know, maybe like I'm trying to think if I play jacks, it's like, okay, this person, I know they can really, you know, they're gonna go like all the way to the 70s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just be sitting here. I don't know if I felt inferior about it. You know, I just knew the person could really play.
What about in terms of career, in terms of at work with coworkers?
No. I mean, I can't remember. I can't remember that. I know that. I know a lot of times in, like, early in my career, if I went to work somewhere, people would, you know, they fall under this title thing, you know, like the person is titled that they're this, and because of that, you know, people are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're afraid of the person. I'm like, no, they, you know, they're people. They're just people, like anybody. I think I've always embodied that. So that wouldn't be, you know, that's not a fear for me. It hasn't been a challenge or anything like that, because I just could see that, you know. This,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, so no, can't do that, but just in terms of performance maybe, but that's it.
I mean,
not feeling. Yeah, that's why I think I'm having, you know, like, okay, come on, Gary, like, I got. You know, I understand the catharticism part, And I had an awareness of this, I guess, but never, I didn't ever pay attention to it. I mean, I just, like, people are people, and the cultural folkways and mores are interesting, you know, but not really to the point where, you know, it does anything to any trades that I'm aware of. It's like, it's interesting. I want to know about it. I don't feel, you know, the necessity to, you know, think about the equality part. See what I mean? I mean, like, equality, I don't know. I'm just saying, I'm thinking because he's a white male, and maybe his, you know, that's an indoctrination and a framework where, you know, he's learned that. But I don't remember, I mean, I don't, that's not a part of me that I say, okay, well, I got to feel equal or, yeah, I even think about it, really.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Let's bring this down to race, and if anyone wants to chime in here at this point, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. Let's talk about race, because, how, I don't know, where did you grow up?
In Maryland.
In Maryland. Okay, so you were above the Mason-Dixon line. I grew up in Georgia. Well, I travel quite a bit, but my parents are originally from Atlanta, and they grew up during the Depression. And they, so, I mean, segregation was you know, well, during, that's all that they were really exposed to as they were growing up. And there was a way that you had to survive in the South. That you had to live now, and what is, what was embedded in them was the belief that if that white people were superior to black people, and the way they survived was to play into that illusion.
Yeah, well, Maryland has some of that too, but I think I see that, and I know that's real, but I had that when I went to, when I first went to college, I was 16 years old, and I was in a, I went to a school that was predominantly white, and I don't remember feeling inferior, but I remember being disappointed because I thought that all white people were smart, and when I got to the, like, history class, they were in there cheating. I was really angry. They were cheating, you know, writing on the, you know, on their jeans and hands and throwing paper and all of that. So I don't know if that was a superior thing. I just thought that they were smart because that's what the media does, or that's what they did, you know, growing up. That was a kind of influence, but I don't think I thought they were, you know, superior. I just thought they were smart. And I was mad when I found out, Dad, you're not. But that's crazy anyway, you know, that's just crazy. Nobody can be like every, I mean, no race of people are going to be the same. It's just not like that. That's not real. That takes away, you know, that race's authenticity. You know, no, none of us are any, all of anything. Just some of us are this and some of us are that and some of that, you know, so that's been my experience with that. And then even in the, you know, like just going through, like the being on the tail end of a lot of the, you know, civil rights stuff. My thing was always like, you know, power to the people. So the people are like, the people are everyone that, you know, or anyone that is, you know, that has issues with, you know, housing and jobs and, you know, it's everybody, all inclusive. And so that's my difference. I don't, you know, so that would have been my experience. But I understand, you know, like the discrimination and the racial stuff, and, you know, it makes sense that you would conform to, you know, whatever's going to, you know, follow that paradigm so that people are comfortable and all that. But even, even with that awareness, Cynthia, it was just always about the people, you know, just the whole, the ignorance of the, you know, of just having people think like that is just senseless.
Okay, so, and those things that you're saying right now, where you're saying for people to think that way is senseless, is a judgment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a judgment, but not where, I mean, at least for me, not where, you know, it's like something that I would have stopped and said, okay, well, that's a judgment. It's just, you know, I need to, you know, really move away from that.
Yeah, what you have, what I find myself trying to do right now, is to recognize that a lot of things that are going on, especially now in terms of politics,
uh-huh.
and watching the dynamics of in politics. You guys know I'm a political junkie, okay?
Yes.
And I think you can see the fear that is playing out. I try to recognize the fear, but. But underneath that fear, I know that there is this divine perfection in the person. So rather than me getting caught up and being angry that these people are being unreasonable, or in my eyes being unreasonable, I actually recognize how afraid they are. And at that point, I actually begin to feel not sorry for them. I just send them a lot of love, because the only thing that we can do to heal those, that area, is to embrace them with love. And you know that your prayer and sending out love, what, the prayer of one faithful person availeth much. It impacts the whole universe. It's a ripple effect. So I try to shift it there. So some, you know, I know that
but
we can.
Did you find it? Well, you know what? When I was reading, what I've seen from, you know, my travels is that everybody. I mean, it's like all of us are very blessed. All of us, and we don't really see it, because everybody wants something else. Because everybody seems or appears to, you know, be wanting something other than what they already have. You know, like I lived in the rural and I thought, gosh, it's beautiful. It's rolling meadows and, you know, the hills and meadows, and the landscape is just awesome. You know, saying like, you know, like 3,000 acres of land and this tree-lined skies. And I thought, boy, what's better than this? But then you might talk to a neighbor and they say, oh, I've been living here all my life. I'm sick of this place, right?
Right.
Or go in the city and it's like, oh, it's just too noisy and it's this and that. And so it's culturally, you know, it's the cultural mix that is, you know, rich and, you know, all kinds of infusions of different cultural folkways and mores. You know, it's all of that. So all of us are blessed and a lot of times we just don't realize it already.
But then doesn't that require us to live in the moment? If we're living in the moment rather than trying to plan everything out, you know, about the future, and you live just in the moment and you appreciate just that moment and you're grateful at that moment. I get the reason I'm saying these things to you, Gloria, is because I am repeating the lessons that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
When you get to that point, then you're not worried. You can feel your blessing in that moment.
Right.
If you stay grateful, have a grateful heart moment to moment. But if you're out in the woods and, you know, you're watching television and you wish you could be in New York City, and then you start trying to make the woods look horrible to push you, to give you motivation to leave the woods and to go to New York City, you're spending all of your creative power imagining about that there's something better. And we do this, that the grass is going to be greener on the other side. But if you live in the moment and say, okay, I have a roof over my head, it's quiet and peaceful, I may desire to go to New York, and I'll make a plan to go to New York, but right at this moment, I'm in my joy. I'm happy. I'm grateful.
Exactly.
You know, so it shifts it. So when people are dissatisfied, what do you do? And they're in a conversation with you. How do you bring them back to that moment where they can appreciate where they are? Because as the light, that's as a light worker, that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, I would suggest, I say it's beautiful here. You know, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. You know, what is it? And
they'll suck their teeth and go, okay, honey, it's all right for you, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's just time for me to go, well, yeah, sometimes it's time to, you know, it may be time to experience something else, you know, just because you live life and it is a journey and you want, you know, you're hoping for the excitement. But that's what that's the way I look. I mean, I've seen it. It's just that all of us are blessed. And, you know, when you go through a transformation, you can just see it all. So that's why I can relate to Reggie, where it's like, yeah, like I've had people even say to me, well, Karen, why do you talk to those people? You know, why do you put your pearls among swine? I thought, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
These are human beings. They don't have to subscribe to everything that I do. What makes my stuff so lofty?
You know,
I can learn a lot. I learn a lot. I mean, you don't know. I mean, like the billionaire homeless person.
Mm-hmm.
That's not that unique, you know, because a lot of people go down that road because whatever, all the attention, people worry to death. I mean, there are many stories about lottery winners and what happened to them. Yeah.
And because they are fearful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so is that wealth a blessing? Look at Mitt Romney right now, who refuses to release his tax returns. What is he afraid of?
I don't know.
Okay, there's some level of fear. And so is the money at that point a blessing or a curse?
I think it can be both, you know, but it's just how you move through it. It can be both a blessing and a curse, but he has to work through that.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times with our leaders and leadership, we don't realize that people come with they have their own stuff too.
Mm-hmm.
They're not perfect. They just, to me, are wonderful people that decide that, hey, they want to really take on all of that. Because for me, no thank you.
No, I know. I totally agree. Well, listen, I want to go ahead and close out this chapter because he ends it so beautifully. And I thank you for your comments this morning.
Oh, you're welcome. You have a beautiful day.
You too. Okay, so Gary Zukav says that your scale does not compare or even register characteristics of personalities. It shows you whether you are relating to a personality or to a soul. All personalities are unique, but none are equal, because some are strong and some are weak, some are young, some are old, some are wealthy, some are poor, and so on. When you perceive an individual as a personality, your tray rises or it falls. But when you perceive an individual as a soul, the trays on your scale are level. You cannot be almost equal. The difference between quality and inequality is the difference between love and fear. When a frightened part of your personality assesses the external power of other personality, then your tray rises or sinks. The loving parts of your personality, they do not judge, and your scale is balanced. So here, remember this. Equality is the perception that nothing in the universe is more precious than you, and nothing in the universe is less precious than you. Spiritual partnerships require it, and spiritual partners help one another develop it. You are special and wonderful. And everyone, all of creation, is special and wonderful. We're all equals in God's eyes. I thank you for joining us this morning. Dr. Reggie is not feeling well. I'm not going to ask him to do our closing prayer, but I'm just going to ask you to hold that thought for the day. God bless you. We'll be here tomorrow morning.